Hey, welcome to Live from America podcast from the Comedy Cellar, New York City. Comedian Boris Hyken is here. Comedian Yo. Kate Herman is here. Hello.
Hello.
And we have a very special episode today. We're going to talk about somebody very special to the Comedy Cellar and to a lot of people in the comedy business, Mr. Greg Giraldo. Matt, can you tell us a little bit about yourself first?
Sure. First, I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you.
Big Giraldo fan, comedian, former money manager myself, uh-huh. and now author.
Okay. You were a comedian?
Am. Yeah.
Okay. So you know Giraldo through comedy?
I met him a few times through comedy, yeah.
Okay. What about you, Wayne?
My name is Wayne Jones. I'm an academic librarian in Canada, and okay. I used to work as a freelance editor. I've never been a comedian.
Okay. Nice. Okay. So what made you want to do this book about Greg Giraldo?
I was at my day job with a second son on the way. A little sad uh-huh. about things. And I went on Amazon and I searched for a Greg Giraldo book and nothing came up. And my first reaction was I was sort of angry. As I mentioned, like he was to me like the Kurt Cobain of the comedy world. And I was pissed that no one wrote a book about him. So that was sort of my aha moment.
Okay. And what is the book about?
It chronicles his life pretty much from high school, like a sprinkling of elementary school, through law school, through becoming a lawyer, through
it's
becoming,
a biography.
Yeah, it's a biography, but till his death.
Okay, you guys met. Do you know Giraldo?
I met him like maybe once or twice at Stand Up New York.
Okay,
I think like probably 8-9 years. I was like just starting stand up.
Okay, and Kate?
No, I never got to meet him.
Okay, so I have a question for you guys. Being a comedian, you know, so. That's one thing about Giraldo as well. He was brilliant, you know, very funny guy. But it seems to me that comedy comes from pain more than anything else. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you laugh the hardest when you need to.
Yeah.
You know, so like from that, you know, like
But sure. is it like depressing to be like, I felt like the funnier he gets, you know, the more depressed he became, you know.
I think it varies for everybody. I know a lot of people who comics that maybe deal with mental illness that have gotten funnier and better and have gotten better in their mental health, and you know, it works different for everybody, I think.
Yeah
Do you guys remember the Psychology Today interview with Greg Giraldo? It was about 2009. So he joked after that it was a suicide letter, but he was very forthcoming in it. And the writer did a fantastic job. But they talked about that, like, you know, darkness and comedy and where does it come from? And yeah. in that article, Giraldo said that he's funniest when he's in a happy place. Now, I mean, we can argue is that true, but that was like from his mouth. He seemed to.
I will say, like, it's easier for me to like write and like get into like a flow and enjoy it when I'm like not stressed out or like bummed, you know what I mean? Like that's what, but like the ideas that I'm writing about are coming from like,
but
some
I feel like
so
it's like good music, I guess.
Yeah
So you'll be performing and you're like having a great set and you feel like that you deserve better, but you're not getting it.
Well, no, yeah, I'm always dissatisfied. that's
right.
I'm not bummed though. Sometimes, you know what I mean. Like yeah. I get it's also like a chemical high. Yeah. But if it goes well, no. But yeah, like, but writing itself, like I try to write. Like if I'm sad, I'm just like, oh, so now I've invented a diary. Yeah. Like this blows. Like nobody wants to hear that. So, like, you know, it's easier for me to write personally if I'm, like, in a good mood, but everything that I'm writing about is the shit that I, like, you know, was in, like, not a great mood about, or, like, that bummed me out, or, like, whatever.
And I think that's an important thing to watch out for, because you don't want to be too kind of self-indulgent. You know, just because something happened to you, it doesn't mean necessarily that'll make good comedy. You know, that applies to anyone, right?
Yeah, well, then those become the diary pieces.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, with Giraldo, is, like, he was supposed to be famous. I mean, he was pretty famous at some time, but the internet was not that strong at the time. So, but he was like, he got his show before Ray Romano, the first show, mm-hmm. you know, he was signed like so many times too. He got so close.
All these holding deals. I think he had over a half dozen holding deals.
More than anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. More than anybody. And I remember one of his jokes is he talks about Keanu Reeves and he was like, you know, how, you know, people say, oh, he's a shitty actor. If he's shitty, how come he's famous and you're not famous? And he's like, and then he says, because life is not fucking fair. But the way he say it, because I know him, I can tell how much pain he's in, you know. But, you know, I think it's crazy. So what's in the book? Let's go through it. Can you tell us a little bit about...
Sure. What page are you on?
Let's start from the start. What do you start with for people that don't know who Greg Giraldo is?
Would you recommend starting the book at the beginning?
If you want to follow convention, you can do that. But you can also go in the middle. It's kind of by topic.
So this is for his fans or whoever who is a fan of comedy?
It's for anyone who can afford to buy a book.
Yeah.
That's the target audience.
How much is it?
$19.99 on Amazon.com.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Or $9 on Kindle.
Okay.
But we start with a foreword by Colin Quinn.
Yeah.
And that was a good get to have because Colin was such a big part of his life. And I think a lot of people, myself included, really appreciated Greg's humor from Tough Crowd. I think that kind of introduced him to a national audience. But we open with one of my favorite bits, is Civil War letters.
Okay, yeah.
Are you familiar with
that? Yeah, I know all his stuff. Yeah, yeah.
So,
you can say it for the listeners. It's fine.
Well, I don't have it memorized, but
you don't have to read it. But yeah, in general, yeah.
What's that?
It's hard here with your balls stuck to your legs in the dessert.
Yeah.
He brilliantly compares the letter from a long time ago to the letter from a soldier from Brooklyn to his girlfriend in the Gulf War.
You have to do the voices, too.
Yeah, you have to do it.
Well, I mean, my dearest Hannah.
Dearest Hannah.
I like this morn finds me racked by the fiery pangs of your absence. Laughter builds and quickly spreads throughout the Comedy Works audience. Before letting the chuckle subside, Greg continues, I'll bear your cherished memory with me as I battle the forces of tyranny and oppression. Then we go on, speaking in his natural, slightly raspy New York tone, Greg says, now think about what the typical letter from your average modern-day soldier to his girlfriend back home in, like, New Jersey's got to read like. Adopting a New Jersey accent, Greg continues, Dear Marie, it is hot as fuck out here. Applause mixes with laughs, and he resumes, It is hard to fight these sand monkeys with your balls stuck to your legs. It is very, very hot out here because I am in the desert.
Yeah, he was brilliant. So you start with somebody who doesn't know Giraldo. What do you tell him about him?
I think he is, in the last 30 years, one of the greatest performers. And and to define that, I'd say he can take a room full of comedy fans who weren't necessarily there to see him and entertain the hell out of them as good or better than anyone in the last, you know, three decades.
And the other thing, too, is that people always talk about him being smart. You know, you have to be smart to make it through Harvard Law School and all that. But he's not a comedian who's pretentious, right? He's very super down to earth. But there's a lot behind the thing that I noticed when we were doing the book was that what came up all the time was the writing that he always did. So he's always writing all the time, right, about the topical things or whatever it might be. It's always like you're getting that kind of practice and always very attuned to specific words and stuff. You can see it from here, sort of making the contrast between the Civil War letters and just going totally the opposite way and getting that other voice.
Right? One of Tough Crowd's episode when he had a fight with Dennis
Leary
about writing.
Yeah,
yeah.
In North Korea.
Yeah, yeah. That was legendary from them. So I don't know. What do you guys put him like right now if you compare him to the comedians? That's going on right now.
Maybe a little bit like maybe cross between Stanhope and Attell. I mean, he was his own voice, but I mean, those are maybe people I'd put in the comparable list.
Yeah.
How about you, Wayne? Or...
Yeah, you'd see it a lot. From the roast, for example, he's famous for the roast, right? And not that was his sort of primary thing, but he was very the thing. He wasn't sort of scared to say what needed to be what needed to be said. And the other thing, a typical thing that happened in pretty much every roast that he did was that there was always a point where the audience would go like that. And there was always one joke that just went way too far, according to the audience. You get that kind of groan thing. And the other thing, the other cool thing about that is that he always had a comeback for that too. You know, he'd say, and one of them was like, groany, groan, groan. It's a fucking roast. Get used to it. That kind of thing, right? So he always had a response to that. So the thing, the main thing I'm trying to say is that he never, there's no kind of limit. Like there's nothing as if something was off base or anything like that. On the other hand, it's not as if he just made his career saying fuck all the time. You know, it wasn't stupid like that.
Yeah, no, he was pretty smart.
Yeah.
You know.
What was your title again that you said it was? What was it, librarian?
Academic librarian.
I mean, that sounded like an academic librarian talking about comedy.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
On the one hand, he didn't have any lines, but on the other hand, smart jokes.
So the book goes about Geraldo's personal life as well, or no?
Yeah, we met one of his high school girlfriends through this. So we talk about what he was like in high school, and then buddies from college, and then women he dated and married, and.
Okay.
So it's centered on comedy, but it's not only comedic.
Yeah, and the other part of it is too. We you know, the chapters basically follow a straight kind of chronology from the time he was born to his death through the accidental overdose.
Yeah.
But we do have a couple of chapters in there that sort of deal with him as an example, but comedy generally, like what it's like on the road, for example.
Uh-huh.
And then there's another chapter in there about addiction, which is can be a common thing sort of for comedians. So we're trying to, you know, make a kind of a general kind of relevance, make it more relevant for people in that way too.
Do you think comedians are as addicted as they used to be before?
As I put my jewel back.
It seems like there's less celebration of the rock star, kind of like Sam Kinison style comic. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe it's because we've seen so many pass. Maybe people are healthier, or maybe it's just I'm talking out of my ass. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like it's celebrated as much as maybe in the 80s or early
90s. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, too. I think that, especially now, like, look at Gen Z. They're all, like, you know, solving all the world's problems, like, activists.
Thankfully.
And everything. Like, totally. Yeah. But, like, we all, like, I feel like everybody grew up, and now, like, whoever is still kind of, like, I mean, I don't know, though. Like, I'm slightly still, like, degenerate, but I don't, like, glorify it. I think of it as, like, a hindrance, and, like, everybody agrees. And so, like, no, like, it's definitely not, like, a thing to idolize at all anymore. It's, you know, half the kids in high schools now don't drink, don't have sex.
Yeah.
They have phones.
Yeah.
You know, like,
that's how they rebel
things.
Now.
Yeah, exactly.
Through chastity and abstinence.
So, who do you think, have you spoken to any of the comedians around Geraldo?
Oh, yeah. We interviewed about 70 people, and I'd say about 45
around that
or so were comics.
Uh huh.
Including many of the
anybody from the Comedy Cellar.
This guy Norm? Next to me, no,
yeah.
Colin Quinn, who did the foreword, we interviewed him. Nick DiPaolo, Robert Kelly.
You interviewed Etel?
We did not. We tried to.
We tried to. Yeah,
yeah. Etel was one of the people that got very affected by Geraldo. I think he changed his whole life because of Geraldo, right? You know, his attitude, his drinking. I think.
Wow.
Yeah, he's Etel is such a great guy. I mean, it's such a family here. It's like, you know, people like more that it's just like not just comedians. You know them personally. You know a lot about them. You know, Geraldo was. I remember there was a waiter that has had a band, and he was playing somewhere, and Geraldo showed up. You know, and to him it was a big deal. You know.
Sure.
Like, and Geraldo was big at that time, and he was very respectful, but, you know, a lot of comedians, so he will do anything like that. So what did the comedian say?
Well, that was a common theme, just his willingness to help those who couldn't necessarily help him.
Yeah.
Like some of the guys who helped write his roast jokes, he would purposely give credit to. And I was in an LA comic, and I had a lot of friends who were doing gigs throughout California, and he happened to be coming through. And he would give them constructive notes without being a dick.
Yeah.
You know, and like my friend Patrick Melton, who opened for him in Florida, he talked about spending a couple afternoons together, and they would just go over punchlines. And he would do it like there were no cameras. No one was documenting this. And he would make such an effort to help these people. And that, I think, is a really cool part of his legacy that I think, you know, until this book came out, we might have not known about.
Yeah, no, that's great. Who else did you talk to from the comedians? And say something interesting about Geraldo.
Well, Mo said something interesting. We talked. Jessica Curson was who not only did she say something interesting, but it was so surprising because she talked about him as a comedian, but then she also shared her own issues with addiction, and that was so enlightening because that was an example of I didn't really know what to expect going into this interview, and I knew she was funny. I liked her comedy and stuff, but then she had all these poignant things to say that I was floored by it, and I'm really glad we got to interview her because I think
this,
it really made
this
the
is how
better.
Good Geraldo was or loved only two people that Manny will give a ride to. Do you know how Manny is? Manny is Noam's dad.
Yeah.
You know? Only two people.
Who's the other guy? Person?
Yes.
Noam?
Attell?
No. Colin.
Was
it me? Colin.
Colin,
no.
Okay.
Colin and Geraldo.
Wow.
He will, they will walk out, usually they schedule next to each other and other comedians, and Manny will look at the others like, all right, see you later. And then, you know, he will take Geraldo. He really, you know, have him as his son. You know, he was incredible. So, yeah.
so if you're here's the interview list. Or,
Ted Alexander. no, comedians. I'm just kidding. Okay. Oh, Jessica. Okay, so during his time, a tough crowd. That was a big deal too, right? You know that the last episode, he signed his own show in the last episode of Tough Crowd. You guys know that story? You know, when Tough Crowd was getting canceled, it was kind of given to Geraldo because of... So do you cover that?
Cringe Humor did a good job writing about that, and we discussed it. And I guess the criticism was, and I don't know if you saw it, but part of the beauty of Tough Crowd was how raw it was and how people would step on each other's lines. And with this reincarnation, it was a little too pristine, is what I think Patrick Mulligan said. Yeah. And that there was no, that kind of barroom mentality wasn't replicated.
It was, yeah.
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
Please.
So this is actually a credit to Colin Quinn, actually. And it just,
absolutely.
It's coming back to me now that this was a big thing that Geraldo had agreed to do Tough Crowd, which was Colin, not only Colin Quinn was the host of it, but it was his show, it was his concept. He invented it.
Yep.
And I actually understood why Greg took the job.
Yeah.
Most people, I think 9 out of 10 people, were angry at him for taking the job at the time. But the point is that here we are now, and Colin is involved in writing the foreword for the book, and you know, Colin is nobody like Colin Quinn.
Yeah. Oh no, absolutely not. Absolutely.
Like Uber absolutely.
And I tell you something: the first person that Geraldo talked to when it was offered the show was Colin Quinn.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you remember. I was at the last the taping of the last episode. Something really funny happened with Geraldo. Geraldo was very embarrassed. It was very uncomfortable. You know, to have you know replaced the show. So Colin was asking everybody to say something, and Patrice O'Neill was being very nice to Geraldo. So they tell him, "Fuck you! You said doing this because now he have his show. So let's switch. Let's have have Geraldo instead of Colin." So Colin sat down, and Geraldo stood up, and he was very embarrassed. He's like, "No! I'm gonna sit down. I can't do this." And Jim Norton was, "Why? The ratings just went up." it was pretty. But if you see Geraldo, he was very uncomfortable, and Geraldo is never uncomfortable. You know, that's how good of a guy
he is. That's interesting. Yeah, and Colin spoke, like what Noam said, Colin reiterated that he basically like gave him his blessing. He's like, "You're not going to behind my back. Like, this is an opportunity for you." But I think it really, you know, impacted his conscience, Greg's conscience.
Yeah, yeah. So do you cover, you know, what led to his death at the end?
Yeah, okay. And Wayne did a hell of a job on that. That was
was he like so depressed that we didn't know about it? You think?
It wasn't about depression, and it was an accidental overdose, as far as we could determine.
Yeah,
there's sort of kind of theories out there that it was either by himself in the hotel in Jersey, or that there's this huge party and he just happened to be.
He was in a hotel. Vinnie Brand found him. He was doing Vinnie Brand's
Stress Factor. Yeah.
It wasn't, as far as we know, it wasn't Vinnie that found him.
Not found him, but he was late at the show and he kept calling him.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. So his girlfriend found him there, tried to revive him, but he was dead in the bed kind of thing. And
comatose.
Yeah. And he lasted for a few days. And once they took him off the machine, he died. But it was basically, not an intentional overdose, not taking, but some kind of combination of the drinking he was doing and the other drugs he'd taken before and the oxycodone. So I'm not an expert in, you know, medical, but.
Google Photos is amazing. They have facial recognition now.
Whoa.
Where literally I just entered in Greg Giraldo. And it identified all the pictures I take, like I have in my art of Greg Giraldo.
Oh, wow.
And this is at my wedding, which is, he died when? This is June.
Which I wasn't invited to.
Can the listeners see these pictures?
June 28th, 2010. When did he die?
September 2010.
September 29th.
So this is just a 3 months before he died.
Oh, my gosh.
This is a wedding. Yeah. And you can see, anyway, whatever.
Actually, I don't know if you know this, but. We had an issue, me and Norman, we weren't talking, we were fighting, and the first time I saw you, I came to at Geraldo's funeral. That's the first time we met again, and we were to start talking.
Godfather.
Yeah. Yeah, he was...
Fredo saw Michael at the mother's funeral, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you know how that ended.
Oh, awesome. I cannot wait.
Not looking good.
So what was the tenor like at the cellar after his passing?
I mean, it was hard. I mean, 2 days again. The first one in the hospital was Colin Quinn again. You know, a couple of days, and I remember I called him and he said he's not gonna make it. You know, it was sad. He's like, as I said, he's very loved by everyone. You know, all the comedians. He was brilliant on and off. I was gonna say on and off the field, on and off stage. I guess, you know, he's really funny. I don't, you know, so it was really sad. Do you guys, as a comedian, do you research like older comedians and stuff like
course.
That? You do?
Yeah.
You're not, I always thought that, like, you're not scared of, like, by mistake hearing a joke that maybe you would thought of or something. And
I feel like I have a pretty unique perspective on things. But, like, Stephen Wright is, like, one of my favorites, and I do a ton of wordplay, or I used to. I still do. And, like... But it's obviously because, like, him, like, Mitch Hedberg, like, those guys, like, that kind of style is, like, what, like, I resonated with. That being said, I have, like, you know, I think it'd be impossible to, like, repeat one of theirs because everything's so...
Yeah.
It's like music.
Changing.
I mean, you have influences.
Yeah, of course.
And you can't uninfluence that, but hopefully you have your own style.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you know that, but I'm not saying you, obviously, guys, but I'm saying Geraldo's joke is the most stolen jokes right now. You know, I don't know if you knew that. A lot of people were accused of stealing a lot of his jokes. Not anybody famous or respectful comedian, but new comedians, you know, people that come out.
Hopefully they buy the book, at least.
Yeah. So, yeah. So,
I mean, for $9.99 on Kindle, yeah, I mean, steal.
You can get a lot of new material, kids.
Right there, yeah. So you guys covered it from his personal life as well as being a comic, right? Which one impressed you more?
Good question. I think he's known for his comedy, but I think what impressed me more is how he treated people.
Yeah.
And the thing for me was the kind of, exactly. We knew that the comedy part was going to be strong, so it was a matter of just sort of presenting that out. But the what it really impressed me was kind of the opposite of that, and it was basically the way he thought about himself. Mm-hmm. And we covered this pretty intensely in the book. And he did an interview in about, I think it was 08 or 09 with Opie and Anthony, where Patrice was on and... couple of other, Jim Norton was on, I think, and a couple of others. And he started talking about basically the way he felt about himself and the way he felt sort of, he never felt comfortable. He never felt part of anything and always felt like an outsider. And so that plus the fact that we were covering something, you know, they call it the imposter syndrome, which is someone who feels that they don't deserve what they've had and really feels that they don't have the everyone else recognizes the skills they have, but they don't recognize it themselves.
Yeah.
So I found that kind of shocking, really, to hear that from someone kind of who was that talented. But it was sort of creepy in a way to hear the thing about him feeling outside of himself, like never comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah.
And sad in a way. Right.
Yeah. So a lot of it, so he was a lawyer and a comedian, Harvard, you know, a lot of comedians have, I was speaking to Kate previously before, she's a model and a comedian. right? Which one started first?
Me too. That's weird. That
yeah, right? Being a comedian since you're 5 years old, you said, right? Or wanted to be a comedian.
I wanted to be a comedian from when I was young. I like turned 13 and like started modeling, and then just like that seemed
How do you choose? She's a model and a comedian.
Yeah, I'm on bus stops right now. I just did a Tiffany's campaign.
Not literally standing at a bus stop, but
but her work is.
So when you have same thing like Geraldo, when you have two careers, that's really good.
I'm not getting divorced anytime soon. You got to make money somehow.
So when you have two careers and they're both working well, like Geraldo or like for you, you know, how do you choose? Do you have to choose?
I think every time I do well in one, it's hurting the other. So I don't really know. Yeah. Like, but who knows? I feel like everything's so up in the air right now, and everybody's fluid in all ways. You know, like
you can. I mean, Noam, you're a musician and businessman and a lawyer,
podcaster,
and a podcaster, obviously. But I mean, like he had like your band was. Pretty, I don't know if you guys been to Cafe Wa. Geraldo been to Cafe Wa a lot. Yeah, it was one of his favorite places. So yeah, I mean, so do you know what made him choose comedy over being a lawyer from Harvard?
I think it was a compulsion out of just disdain for being in a sterile mega firm. You know, when you're a performer at heart and you're stuck in an office, it's pretty awful. So it wasn't as if he's like, I'm going to do this as a profession. It just, he started performing at open mics. And doing really well, and he enjoyed it. And one thing led to the next, but it wasn't like this clear delineation. Like,
I think he started doing that in law school.
In law school, yeah, correct.
And that was a little unclear. It sounds as if his first open mic was when he was at Skadden.
Was it? Because I have a friend, one of my closest friends, was in his law school class.
Okay.
And he knew him, and maybe he didn't say he was already doing open mics, but he was already disenchanted with the law, I think.
Oh yeah, that was clear. In fact, some of his law school roommates kind of shared that disenchantment.
Yeah,
like they would do well. I mean, in that they would pass their classes, but they weren't the gunners sitting in the front row raising their hand.
Did they think that he was as good of a lawyer as being as good at like comedy? No,
I think they think he was a better comedian than lawyer.
Oh yeah, that's funny.
Around the time Obama was in Harvard Law School.
Yeah, he was just a year before Obama. So yeah, they overlapped.
Well, that's a tough. Shadow.
For Obama.
I mean, for Obama, yeah.
His roast materials, it's okay, but yes.
Oh, that's
he wouldn't be a regular at the Cellar.
So since we have...
Geraldo saw Obama's ears, forget about it.
So you talk also about, you know, marriage and family, you know. Mm-hmm. That was a big struggle in his life, correct?
Oh, yeah. He had two marriages. The first one was less than a year. But then even his second one was longer tenured, about a decade.
Yeah.
But before he passed, they were going through separation proceedings.
Yeah.
So the prior guest could have been a big help.
Yeah, yeah. Did you get to talk to his ex-wife?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did she get to say?
That was, I think, maybe one of the most enlightening interviews we did, because she talked much more so about what it was like being married to someone who's incredibly talented. She always acknowledged that, but also struggling with addiction.
Yeah.
And, you know, she wanted to be supportive of his comedy and his career, but meanwhile, she has three boys to raise.
Yeah.
So it was very eye-opening. Like, I felt kind of like an asshole because I was so broken up when he passed, because I was like, we're missing out on his comedy.
Yeah.
And then when I talked to her, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so much bigger. Like, there's three children and there's this family. I mean, it changed the scope of my thinking tremendously.
The other thing I was impressed with is that, I mean, like in the last couple of years when he was basically an alcoholic and I guess an addict, is that she didn't, you know, in a way she didn't sort of take it personally, in the sense of he was doing this to the family. She knew he was addicted. This was something that was controlling him. But she also knew in a practical way, just like Matt was saying, that he couldn't be living with the family. He was hurting the family, and that's why he didn't live there for the last couple of years with them.
But I mean, he was dealing with this addiction, but he was never late, never have any problems on a stage, never, you know, yeah. I never see him flirting with other girls or anything like that. You know, he was like the perfect guy, but he was like at the same time is like addicted. Like, I don't know.
Well, you can be the perfect guy, you know, 98% of the time, and it takes one weekend of falling off the wagon, and then you're not with us anymore.
Yeah, unfortunately. So his projects, you talk about his first show, right?
Yeah, Common Law. He was only doing comedy a few years, and he had a sitcom. Short-lived, but still, that was very impressive.
Yeah, and what else after that?
Well, then he kind of had to become a working comic.
Yeah.
But he had about a half dozen holding deals, and he had a sitcom in the works with Conan O'Brien as a producer,
yeah,
and Nick Swartzen, who was, you know, one of the actors in it, and it looked like it had all the makings of being the next Frasier. It was on the same network, and then for whatever reason, you know, we didn't get the scoop on that. It just didn't make it. But it had everyone in his ear saying, "All right, it's going to be on the slate of programming."
Yeah.
But then a lot of people saw him in about, was it 2009 on Last Comic Standing?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? I think that kind of introduced him to the masses.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a sad story in a way, because that's even though he was, you know, as everyone was talking about here, a very well-known comedian, everyone knew he was brilliant and all that stuff. But people who didn't follow comedy or didn't come into the Cellar wouldn't know about him. But to get on national television, to be a judge on Last Comic Standing, and then within a year to be dead, you know, basically he was sort of just ready to make that leap into sort of being better known, like, say, like maybe Jim Gaffigan is now, for example, where people know about him a lot more.
Yeah. So as a comedian, Boris, as a comedian, do you, how do you deal with, you know, when you see something like that, somebody maybe that you didn't know, but you heard that was great, but didn't make it and led to that, you know, death, like, you know.
Well, I think, what year did you say? It was 2010, 2011 he passed away?
In 2010.
2010. So yeah, I must have met him like real close to that, like probably 3 or 4 months before then, I feel like.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was a really nice guy. I can't say I have like an extensive memory of it, but I remember him being very nice, very friendly. I think it was like generally affected me as far as somebody I respected passing away, but it's not somebody close to me, so I can't, you know, I'm not going to pretend that it was like...
Yeah, but does it affect you, him being a comedian, even if you don't know him at all? You know, would that ever come to your mind as like what kind of depression that he must have been? And I have to avoid that in comedy business or comedy world.
No, because I don't have that predisposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really deal with that sort of thing. So it wasn't like anything that I needed to reflect on myself. It was just kind of, you know, that sucks that happened to somebody.
So you have a chapter here that says Final Days. So what do you cover in this chapter?
The events leading up to his passing and...
Which was...
Well, I don't want to give away the it's titillating. You have to read it.
So it's like literally what happened before, or what led to
both
psychologically.
The psychology is a big component of it. But then we also chronicle his mindset. He had a doctor's appointment that was very telling a few weeks before he was at the Stress Factory, and then we have accounts of people who were at his Stress Factory shows, and they say how good he was performing, but then we also and Wayne did a great job with this. We have information from his girlfriend, and they were, you know, in a good place, and then she was going to come up to visit him, and instead of him visiting her, he went out and partied, and not surprisingly, it didn't sit too well with the girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then, so we cover that, and then subsequent, and Wayne did it. I want to thank him. He did. That was not something I wanted to do, because I wasn't comfortable with it, and so I tipped my cap to Wayne.
Did you guys know each other from before?
No. In fact, we hated each other.
Just generally,
so we did a Kickstarter campaign to help raise some funds for it, and that's how Wayne and I met.
Okay, and how did you guys decide to do this together, and or why did you decide to do it together?
Well, I mean, it was Matt. Basically, I remember Matt sort of testing me out, basically with sending me. Actually, this actually happened. Sending me transcripts of interviews he had already done, and he was just wanting my opinion of, you know, what stands out for you in this interview. And I remember doing that like maybe half a dozen times, and I think it was a very useful thing for you to do, because Matt, I think, could see that you know, I was serious about this, but also that maybe our minds were sort of on the same wavelength. Yeah. Like, this is the thing we picked out in the, say, the Colin Quinn interview that's really, really telling, that kind of thing. And after about maybe half a dozen, eight of those, I think Matt thought about it. This is what I think anyway, just judging from the timing. And then asked me to be his co-author. I've got some experience in writing for libraries, but also for, I've written a couple of novels and another book, so I know a little bit about writing. And that's how we ended up being co-authors.
Yeah, I felt guilty not paying him for so long, so I had to throw him a bone after.
Yeah. So is that your first book?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's my first book.
Okay. So is your comedy, you're a comedian still?
Yeah.
Still now. Now, writer or comedian?
Both. Like, I mean, I write my own jokes.
Okay,
so,
yeah. Okay. So were you affected by Geraldo's?
Yeah. And I was in LA at the time. And so I remember when, like, Michael Jackson, or a lot of celebrities pass and all these people cry. And
yeah.
I was always the asshole. I was like, what? They didn't know him. But then when it was someone I followed and admired, it was the first celebrity who's dying I cried from.
Yeah.
And I hadn't cried in years over, like, a death. And so it was difficult because I was like, why did I have such a visceral reaction? And then he meant a lot to me. And then I think he meant a lot to so many people in the comedy community as well.
Yeah, he did. No, definitely. So we want to end in a good note. Do you guys want to give us some fun story about Geraldo?
I like the plastic ass story. So he used to, in the end, actually, he hung out a lot with, or Jesse Joyce hung out a lot with Greg Giraldo.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to go on the road together. I think Jesse would open and Greg would be featuring. And they used to stay in hotels together. And the other thing is that Jesse did a lot of writing of some of Greg's jokes for the roasts, for example.
Uh-huh.
Jesse is actually, I've seen him perform live at least once. He's fantastic. He actually sounds a little like Geraldo. But anyway, the thing about the ass was that, you know, they'd hang out in hotels and, you know, lend each other money and stuff. And Greg got as a joke, someone gave him this plastic ass that when you're on the road, you're supposed to be fucking in order to, you know, to keep you from, you know, committing adultery on your wife, that kind of thing. So, and Greg was saying to Jesse, Jesus, this fucking thing is great. I think it's going to save my marriage, kind of thing.
I'm tired.
So that went on. And then later on, like a couple of days later, Greg said, listen, Jesse, I got that $200 that I owe you. Why don't you come up to the room? He came up to the room. And Geraldo had stuffed the money inside the plastic ass kind of thing. So Jesse was imagining, just picking it out kind of thing, just trying to make his fingers not touch everything that was in there.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's really funny. I think it's great that you guys, you know, writing, knowing him personally and as a fan of comedy as well. It's just like, I think it's great that you wrote this book. And I hope people will go and research him more and find his jokes and all that. And, you know, and this is, and like you said, it's bigger than just being a comedian. I mean, he is a great comedian. And I think what made him a great comedian is because he is a great person, you know. I don't know if those two should always connect.
Right.
You know, but maybe what made him special, or like you said, people cry for him or people that know him or become fan, become, you know. Because he was just brilliant, you know. He would write every single day, you know. So, all right, so where do people get your book again?
Please check it out on Amazon.com. And for updates, go to GregGiraldoBook.com or Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. The handle is @GregGiraldoBook.
Okay, great. Thank you guys so much. This is great. Thank you for coming to the Comedy Cellar where he was a legend, you know. Do you guys want to share information, Boris?
@TheBorisK.
@TheBorisK. And watch Boris before it's too late. Is that bad? Is that bad?
No, I'm good. I went to a therapist once in my life, true story, after a breakup.
Yeah.
And she told me I don't need therapy.
Nice.
that's hilarious.
No joke.
Wow. Too healthy. Wow.
I went to therapy like after I went out of the hospital like a month ago, and it was I was against it. I didn't want to do it, and then I'm in the waiting room, and it's kind of like, it's an office where there's a lot of therapists, and everyone will come and call the patient and come, and every single one was so hot. I was like, this is awesome. But my turn became the oldest one, and she's like taking one step at a time. I was like, God, please.
It's like not going to the masseuse, and yeah, then you get
I want the other one.
Exactly. Yeah. Not her. She's like, what problems do you have? I was like, nothing.
I'll tell you my problem. My therapist ain't high enough.
It's a real problem.
I was like, are you depressed? I was like, well, now I am. I wasn't.
When I
came here, and I wasn't depressed at all. You know, now I'm depressed all of a sudden.
Do you have to say at that point, do you have a daughter in psychiatry?
I know. Anything. Wayne, you want to share your information?
Wayne, I've got my own website, waynejones.ca. I live in Canada.
Okay, and Matt?
Matty B Game is my Twitter handle, and at Greg Giraldo Book.
And is that going to be my last question before, I know you said that, but it just came to me. Is that going to be your thing, writing about comedians or stuff like that, you think? Or is it just a Giraldo project?
That's a great question. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm open to it, but it was never my goal to write.
Yeah.
Depends how much money this one makes and who dies next.
There's a steady stream of dying comedians, so there'll be plenty to write about.
I think we should, like, one day write books about people that's still alive. It just kills me. You know, how people get, you know, recognized too late. You know, maybe if we all told him how great he was, maybe things would have been different. I mean, he knew how much we felt about him. But, you know, thank you for coming here and doing this show. And he's a very special person. So thank you for writing this. And
thank you.
If anyone from his family listening, you know, we love you and always there for Giraldo. So, yeah, Live from America podcast.
You were listening to Live from America podcast. To contact us, please go to www.liveframericapodcast.com. Brought to you by the Comedy Cellar and Rethink Production.